About that pay package you Citigroup executives were expecting?
Your shareholders are saying, not so fast.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon.
And in New York, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. This is the Marketplace Midday Update, our podcast from Marketplace.org. It's Wednesday, April 18th.
Coming up, a cancer revelation from the Oracle of Omaha. Nothing serious, he assures us.
And do you Hulu? The online TV service is looking to expand.
And cable TV is going to the dogs. The canines seem to love it.
Those stories and more just ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
Citigroup investors just pushed back on outsized executive pay. 55% of the bank's shareholders voted against pay packages for top execs, including $25 million in compensation for CEO Vikram Pandit. The vote is advisory only, though, and thus doesn't actually force a change in Citi's pay practices. So what will it accomplish? Executive compensation expert Paul McConnell is on the line with his take on the message it sends. He's managing director at Board Advisory LLC. Glad to have you join us.
Thank you.
I've seen stories that Citigroup can go ahead and stay with its pay practices in spite of this vote. If this doesn't change things, what might?
Well, it is an advisory vote, which means it's non-binding on the board, but it's non-binding in the sense that the pay is not going to be taken away as a result of this. The board will react to this. I mean, no board is going to take a no vote from shareholders and ignore it. If they were, I mean, which is, I think, first of all, not going to happen, but if they were, the next step with shareholders would be to vote the board members out.
Do you think the attention this is getting might touch off some kind of shareholder revolt at other companies over these pay packages?
Well, I mean, first of all, you got to understand the Citicorp pay package is not outrageous in terms of the amount of pay. I think the issue at Citicorp is more shareholders are questioning the relationship between pay and performance.
So these Citi shareholders are basically saying, you want this, you've got to earn it.
They're unhappy with that subjective approach. They think the standards are probably not high enough for the amount of compensation that's earned.
But you don't think this reflects general angst among shareholders in general, not just at Citi?
No, I do not. As a matter of fact, the reason for that is that corporate America has done a pretty good job over the last 2 or 3 years in removing most of the what are known as problematic pay practices that were really making shareholders irate. And also, you've got to understand with Citi, I mean, there could be a lot of other things rattling around here. Citi is an organization that's had its share of troubles over the last few years. And they're basically telling the board that something is wrong and they want it fixed. And the board will probably make some changes in their pay programs in reaction to this.
Paul McConnell at Board Advisory LLC, thanks for your insights.
You're welcome.
Citigroup stock was down 0.4% around the opening bell today, that after the shareholder vote. Josh Brown is vice president at Fusion Analytics. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning.
So, Josh, shareholders getting kind of tough here. What's going on?
This is a milestone. This is the first time, really ever, that a major financial institution saw its compensation proposal voted down by shareholders. 55% of Citigroup's shareholders, most of them institutions, essentially said, absolutely not, in terms of what the five highest paid executives wanted to make this year.
You say this is a milestone. Is this something we should expect to see more of?
Yeah, I do. Last year, only 2% of compensation plans at public companies were voted against. So it's a very remote thing. But you're starting to hear more and more vocal shareholders. Another great example of this could be Yahoo. And then this morning, there were some startling details about a company called Chesapeake Energy and the types of things they're allowing their CEO to get away with. So I do think there's going to be a lot more vocal shareholder meetings this spring.
Hmm. Will this change the way companies are run?
You know, I think that it will change the way companies look at pay packages for executives. There's a thing that goes on where it's a constant that there's bad behavior and that there are outsized compensation packages, but it's not until people actually notice and the money is gone that they say, wait a minute, wait a minute. So when things are good, this stuff gets overlooked. Right now, things are not great, and I think that that's what's driving this.
Josh Brown is vice president at Fusion Analytics. Thank you, Josh.
Thank you.
Billionaire investing legend Warren Buffett has been diagnosed with early-stage prostate cancer. The CEO and chairman of Berkshire Hathaway is assuring shareholders his disease is not life-threatening. But John Dimsdale reports the diagnosis is a reminder the Oracle of Omaha is growing older.
Buffett is 81 and has already told shareholders succession plans are in place. He'll begin radiation treatment 5 days a week for 6 weeks, but he says he feels great, still has lots of energy, and has no plan to retire anytime soon. David Cass at the University of Maryland Business School doesn't think he has to.
His typical work day is sitting in his office reading annual reports and maybe speaking on the telephone, and I think those responsibilities would be easily maintained. So I really don't think this should have a major influence on his performance.
Last February, Buffett told investors Berkshire Hathaway's board has chosen someone to take over as CEO when he does retire, and he says there are two backup candidates. Not one of the three has been identified. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Whitney Tilson is a managing partner at T2 Partners and a Berkshire Hathaway shareholder. Let's get his reaction to the Buffett news. Good morning, Whitney.
Good morning.
Whitney, you are a shareholder in Berkshire Hathaway. How did you feel when you read Buffett's letter?
Well, first of all, just personally and emotionally, I know Warren Buffett. He's been a hero and a mentor to me, and so my heart went out to him personally. And when you see the word cancer in the first word of a press release, it's obviously, you know, quite frightening and troubling.
Yeah.
But as I continued to read that the prognosis is excellent, there's no other cancer in his body. And then I did a quick Google search on, you know, what the prognosis is for someone with this diagnosis. And, you know, it's basically medically, it's a complete non-event. It does not affect his life expectancy, his ability to do his job, et cetera. So that was obviously a big relief personally, but also as an investor in Berkshire Hathaway, it's our largest position. We've been adding to it in recent weeks. So this does not change at all our view on how attractive the stock is.
Does this put more pressure on Berkshire Hathaway to be more public with their succession plans?
I know some shareholders want him to reveal his successor. We don't think that makes any sense and don't want him to do so. Yes, it'll create a one-day news cycle of some people clamoring for that, and Buffett and the board of directors of Berkshire Hathaway will rightly ignore it, and this will go away. If Buffett were on his deathbed today, we would feel differently, and they would likely announce his successor. But given that a healthy, stress-free 81-year-old has a 12-year life expectancy, it would make no sense to identify a successor today because a lot of things can change in 5 or 10 years.
Whitney Tilson is a managing partner at T2 Partners and a Berkshire Hathaway shareholder. Whitney, thank you.
My pleasure.
The White House is threatening to veto a transportation bill after House legislators tacked on an approval for the Keystone XL oil pipeline from Canada to Texas. Meanwhile, the company building the pipeline says it secured almost all the land it needs to start construction on a shortened line from Oklahoma to the Gulf Coast. From Red River Radio, Kate Archer Kent reports.
The horses grazing in direct Texas pay no attention to their owner.
Come on! Come on, Yogi!
Farmer Julia Trigg Crawford says the horses are ignoring her because she hasn't had time to ride them. She's all consumed by her court battle. TransCanada condemned part of her pasture to make way for its 500-mile pipeline. She's challenging eminent domain law. That's where private property can be taken for public use. She says her legal defense against TransCanada could cost $300,000.
When you realize that you are up against a foe with a deep pocket, and we've got a lot of grit, but we don't have the money.
She's concerned about the environmental impact to her land and a decline in value with a pipeline running through it. Crawford launched a website, standwithjulia.com. So far, she's raised about $7,000.
People are sending me nickels and dimes. They know that this is not an easy thing to do. They're appreciative almost that someone just like them, Joe Everyman, farmer in Texas, is willing to say, okay, we'll stand out front if you guys kind of back us up.
Crawford says TransCanada offered her $20,000 to use her pasture. She refused, so the company took her to court. Now a jury decides compensation. Attorney Hal Cameron has defended thousands of landowners in eminent domain disputes. He says Texas law is clear-cut. Roads, power lines, pipelines will always need to be built.
Landowners pretty much up against the wall. Not much you can do. The real fight is over the money. How much are they going to pay for taking your land? How much are they going to take you for damaging your land?
TransCanada spokesman Jim Prescott says legal challenges attract attention, but they're rare. He says the vast majority of easement agreements for pipelines are decided at a kitchen table.
We've certainly had a lot of landowners come to us and say, let's do business.
Prescott says TransCanada hopes to start construction by midsummer once it has all federal permits and landowner agreements in hand. Julia Trigg Crawford's trial is set for April 30th. In Direct Texas, I'm Kate Archer-Kent for Marketplace.
You probably think of Hulu as a website where people go to watch TV shows online. But now Hulu's making its own shows and looking for advertisers. Marketplace's Eve Tro reports.
Years ago, Netflix started buying films at Sundance.
Doing an end run around Hollywood studios.
And made the first digital power play against the media giants, says tech writer Chris Null. The power struggle's grown as online viewings evolved beyond old movies and reruns.
By and large, the stuff that's being watched is new stuff.
Digital distributors want to say to the big guys, if you won't give us your newest, best stuff, well,
they got some demands. I'm thinking Lilyhammer.
We'll buy or make our own, like the Netflix-only show Lilyhammer, about a New York gangster in Norway. Andrew Lipsman at digital media firm Comscore says the underdogs are banking that content is king.
To the extent that Hulu and Netflix can generate new hits and bring new subscribers into the fold, I think it could potentially be very valuable.
Key word there, hits. The shows have to be good enough for people to keep their Hulu and Netflix accounts, because that's where the good stuff is. I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
Amazon is stepping up its publishing push with help from none other than Agent 007. The online bookseller has just acquired the rights to the James Bond novels behind the movies. Here's Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London.
The movies have gone global, but the books are largely forgotten. Now the author's family wants to gain a wider readership for the novels. It sold the rights to 14 original titles to Amazon. The retailer will publish them in print and also in e-book form, enlivened with clips from the movies.
Good to see you, Mr. Bond. Things have been awfully dull round here.
Amazon will also link the text to Bond merchandise. The company's acquired a 10-year license. It could be a license to make a killing, says e-commerce expert Ajay Bala of the Cass Business School.
The multimedia offering just it's a great add-on, offers a great revenue streaming opportunity for a company such as Amazon.
Amazon is certainly on a roll. The company is also likely to benefit from last week's lawsuit over e-book price fixing. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Chicago City Council is expected to approve a new measure today to allow speed cameras around the city, with fines of up to $100. Mayor Rahm Emanuel says it'll increase safety for children, but some call it a cash grab. From WBEZ in Chicago, Susie Ahn reports.
High school student Juana Labro was crossing the street near school when she got hit by a car. She suffered neck injuries and missed 3 weeks of class. Labro wished there had been a speed camera at that corner.
If drivers are aware that there's cameras around, they would take more precaution when driving.
The Chicago City Council plans to install speed cameras around schools and parks. According to city officials, more than 2,700 children were hit by cars over a five-year period ending in 2010. Commissioner Gabe Klein with the city's Department of Transportation says Chicago's got a culture where speeding is sort of okay.
I think we have some cultural values that need to change, and I think no way better than with technology when our resources are constrained.
Some city residents think the measure is all about money. Here's Alderman Leslie Hairston speaking at a committee meeting.
You all continue to say, well, this is about kids, and it's not about kids.
To make it more about the kids, the administration made a few tweaks to the proposal. Some speeders will pay 30% less than originally suggested, and camera hours will match up with school hours. Commissioner Klein didn't know exactly how much the speed cameras will bring in, but he expects revenue to decrease as drivers learn to slow down. In Chicago, I'm Susie Ahn for Marketplace.
So, Bob, do you have any furniture from IKEA?
I admit I do, actually.
I think maybe everyone does.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually getting into the electronics business now. The company just unveiled the Upliva. That's its flat-screen TV.
I love the names.
I know. and it's a flat-screen TV, but it also includes a DVD player, an iPod dock, Wi-Fi, and
course, a storage drawer. And it'll cost $950, which is not a bad deal. Of course, as you know, Bob, from owning IKEA furniture, you probably have to figure out how to put it together, which could be the trick.
Yeah, as long as they give me the pictures, I'm okay.
And a couple Allen wrenches.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
When times are tough, you'd think people would take it easy on the champagne and designer clothes. Well, apparently not. The world's largest luxury goods company posted huge profits today. In our midday extra, the BBC's Sarah Stolarz reports on how sales to the 1% shot up by 25%.
Dom Perignon, Louis Vuitton, Bulgari. They're all names synonymous with luxury and excess. You may not have heard of LVMH. It's the company that owns all of those brands, and it's posted a 25% rise in sales in the past 3 months. Continual growth in emerging markets like Asia and Russia is fueling the increase. James Lawson is director of Ledbury Research, a consulting firm for luxury brands and wealthy consumers. He says that a love of spending and travel amongst new consumers is helping to prop up markets worldwide.
The impact of these emerging markets is not only in their home markets, but also in their historic markets of Western Europe and North America.
Lawson says wealthy customers from emerging markets will vacation in the developed world and open their wallets for luxury goods that are hard to find back home. But LVMH says not all its success was from the high-end brands. The strongest brand growth at the company was actually seen at cosmetics retailer Sephora. The makeup company is usually thought of as directed towards the 99%. It caters to walk-in customers at shopping malls. And analysts argue the success of a mid-level brand like Sephora could be a sign that the luxury bubble may be about to burst. In London, I'm the BBC's Sarah Stolarz for Marketplace.
Opposition protests may have died down in Russia, but that doesn't mean Vladimir Putin can relax now that voters have returned him to the presidency. Many of those protesters were entrepreneurs, and the bureaucratic red tape and corruption that brought them to the streets have not gone away. Peter Van Dyke reports from Moscow.
Russia has been plagued with corruption for as long as anyone can remember. Vladimir Putin's campaign chief said the president-elect's achievement during his first stint in the Kremlin was to bring corruption down to civilized levels. It's something that small business owners like Daniel Roulette can never ignore.
My policy is basically avoid anything that's going to be putting me in a situation where an official can ask money from me.
Roulette owns a couple of budget hotels. He says vague or undefined laws are a big problem, and some regulations are almost impossible to follow. Californian Alexander Canovas runs a small food processing business.
Most of the problems that we've dealt with are the intractability of government bureaucrats. Not always looking for some kind of remuneration. Sometimes it's just simple inflexibility. Not having the right dots on the right I's, that type of thing. And sometimes you just can't change their minds.
Remuneration. That's a polite way of saying bribes. Dmitry Medvedev became president 4 years ago, vowing to fight corruption, but had little effect. Now it's Vladimir Putin's turn again, but businesses know there will be no magic wand.
Without getting into very many specifics, there are always ways of appeasing those people that are putting pressure on you.
Canovas says if he budgeted an extra 10 or 15% for any project in the US, in Russia he gives himself a 30 or 40% cushion. Still, he's not discouraged.
There's a lot of difficulties, but difficulties provide opportunity, so I think that it's a good place to be.
That is because many markets are still open for new entrants to make big profits, and that is the beauty of business in Russia. In Moscow, I'm Peter Van Dyke for Marketplace.
Finally, Stacey, we've got something from the Marketplace, something else you didn't know you needed file.
I love this file.
A new cable TV channel for dogs. We're not talking dog lovers. This is really programmed for dogs, with video shot from a dog's point of view, low, and even altered colors to catch a dog's particular eyesight. It's being tested around San Diego and soon aims to go national, both cable and online streaming for a small subscription fee. It's supposed to help pets stuck inside with separation anxiety. Now, I can just hear the skepticism coming out of New York right now.
Well, you know, we're a skeptical city.
Well, programmers have posted a YouTube clip with a local Humane Society official out here in California, Sally Costello, reporting an improvement in shelter dogs exposed to the channel. It's also advertising free, Stacy, so your pup won't get into any mischief because Dog TV has to take a pause.
Oh!
Sorry. In Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon.
And in New York, I'm Stacy Vanek Smith. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.